Now playing Open Floor.
This is Open Floor.
Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix back at it.
An NBA podcast with Sports Illustrated senior writer.
I think it's time that the world get to know
my guy Chris Mannix.
I think your opinion's shared by everyone.
And now it begins.
Bang!
Welcome back to Open Floor, Sports Illustrated's NBA podcast. On this episode, we are going to take a deep dive into the Eastern Conference Finals. Chris Forsberg, Celtics insider from NBC Sports Boston, he will join me. We'll get into all things Celtics-Pacers, from the Kristaps Porzingis injury to the Tyrese Haliburton matchup against Boston's great defensive wings to the impact of Pascal Siakam, who only played one game for the Pacers against the Celtics during the regular season. As always, subscribe, rate, review the pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. Before we get there, man, tip of the cap to the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are now in the conference finals for the first time in nearly two decades. I mean, what a game that was in Denver on Sunday. Minnesota, down 15 at halftime, down 20 in the third quarter, and they come back to win. First half, Anthony Edwards, awful. Mike Conley, awful. Rudy Gobert, awful. I don't know anyone outside of Minnesota that thought a comeback in this situation in Denver was remotely possible. Well, a 28-14 rally in the third and a 32-23 run in the fourth did exactly that. And look, we started a discussion about this really with Edwards, who had 9 points in that third quarter and sparked the rally for Minnesota. Played great defense on Jamal Murray, too. Held Murray to 2 of 7 in that quarter. You know, Jalen Brunson has been the Eastern Conference's breakout star this postseason. But out West, it's all Edwards, who is legit one of the best two-way players in the game. Karl-Anthony Towns, same kind of story. I didn't really think about this until late Sunday night, but Towns has been in Minnesota for 9 years. 9 years. He was a teenager when he got there. He has been through so many evolutions of this team. But game 7, 23 points, 12 rebounds, played some credible defense on Jokic, and had what really was the game-clinching putback late in the fourth quarter. I mean, it feels like every year we talk about when Karl-Anthony Towns is going to get traded out of Minnesota. Well, he is now the franchise player, or I guess one of them, for a really good team in the Timberwolves. Now, got to say this about Rudy Gobert, and I said this on Twitter on Sunday. All the Rudy Gobert haters out there, from Draymond Green to Russell Westbrook to, like, all of NBA Twitter, you need to take an L this week. You need to log off. You know, 13 points, 9 rebounds, whatever. That's not the story. Minnesota, they outscored Denver 60-37 in the second half. Rudy played 17 of those 24 minutes and was a plus 18 overall in the half. In the fourth quarter, he played 10 minutes and tied for the team lead in scoring. That's right, Rudy Gobert tied for the team lead in scoring. Made a turnaround jumper. I don't think I've ever seen Rudy make a turnaround jumper, but that was like such a lifting moment for Minnesota as Denver was trying to claw their way back into it. Rudy made 4 of his 5 free throws in the fourth quarter, 7 of 9. Overall, had 5 rebounds in the fourth. He was everywhere defensively. Look, this guy gets a lot of grief, and I get some of it. Not all of it, but some of it. But this is a Hall of Fame player. Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. A 4-time Defensive Player of the Year who just played a huge role in his team getting past the defending champs and into the Western Conference Finals. So if you're going to kill Rudy for all of his failures, you've got to give him credit for his successes, and this was one of the biggest of his career. Now, as for Denver, you know, I don't know. I heard some of the excuses being made on Sunday. The offseason was too short. The pressure of being the defending champs was too great. You know, whatever. You lost 3 games at home. Like, you got to own that. Jokic was, by and large, great, including Sunday. 34 points, 19 rebounds. I mean, yeesh. This guy's the best player in the world. Like, full stop. But Denver had 2 guys in double figures in Game 7. Jokic and Murray. No one else had more than 7 points. Michael Porter Jr., 3 of 12. Aaron Gordon, 2 of 7. The bench made 1 shot. 1 shot. You know, the big question with the Nuggets was, could Christian Brown and Peyton Watson replace what Denver got from Bruce Brown and Jeff Green last year? And now that they're out, we can say definitively the answer is a resounding no. And now Denver goes into another summer where they could lose another key piece. I mean, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he can be a free agent. You've got Jamal Murray, extension eligible. Aaron Gordon, extension eligible. I mean, this team is about to get very, very expensive. You know, they've got some good, cheap young talent on the roster. You can throw Julian Strother, Zeke Nagy, Hunter Tyson in that mix. But the only one that got any meaningful minutes from Michael Malone in the playoffs was Christian Brown, and you can't have that. So there are questions. Do they blow the payroll up and sign KCP to a new contract? I mean, this is a team that historically does not like to have a high payroll. Do they look to trade Porter Jr., see if they can get a couple of rotation pieces for him, kind of break that contract up? I mean, they really need a couple of those young guys to pan out in the way that Jokic and Murray and MPJ have in previous drafts. That's how you keep this window open. That's how you keep hopes for a mini Jokic-led dynasty alive. And look, this is what the NBA wants. For the sixth straight season, there will be a new NBA champion. Three of the four conference finalists this year were not there last year. The NBA loves parity. It is Adam Silver's dream to have an NFL level of parity in the postseason. It's what they've been trying to establish with the last two collective bargaining agreements. They want to make it hard for any team to establish a dynasty. And this is what the Nuggets are kind of up against now. They still have a great team, and I'd argue running it back is the smartest thing to do. I mean, they were a great regular season team, and they were one horrific half for advancing back to the conference finals. But the margin for error between being a great team and a championship team is very, very thin. And I think we saw that in this series this year. All right, coming up next, we will talk Eastern Conference Finals with Celtics insider Chris Forsberg. All right, Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston. Let's start with the elephant in the room, or rather the Latvian in the room. And that is Kristaps Porzingis, who has not played since the end of April, still dealing with that calf strain. Reporting out there suggests that Porzingis will be out for at least the first two games of this series. What are you hearing right now about Porzingis? And I mean, just how impactful is it for the Celtics not to have him for, you know, let's just say at least the first two, maybe even longer in this series?
Yeah. So like, look, there's been little encouraging glimpses, right? Like probably the first weekend after it happened, he showed up and he was doing some stationary shooting. And I thought, you know how guys tend to disappear when it's a bigger deal. So I thought that was like an encouraging sign. I don't think they're trying to fool anybody here. He admitted as much afterward that it's very similar to when he had on the other leg at the start of the season. It's going to take more time. I think we all circled the start of the Eastern Conference Finals as a potential date. Like, here's what I'll say that like guys inside the Auerbach Center can't say. Like, there's no reason to rush him, right? Like, if you trust the talent you have on this roster, if you trust the roster you've built, then okay, navigate these first two games. Maybe then you look up, you see where he's at in his recovery. You see where the series is at. And maybe it's so selfish to say like, oh, maybe you have the fortune of resting him at least deeper into the series. I think you want to get him some reps before, if you are lucky enough to go on to the NBA finals. But I do think that sort of is Indy the team that you want to throw a 7'3" dude on the court and tell him run up and down against this track meet. So I would just tread cautiously if I was them. And I think they understand, right? Like if they're going to achieve their ultimate goal, which is the whole conversation around here, then you probably need to just be as careful as possible and hope that soon to be 38-year-old Al Horford and whatever small ball lineups you come up with are enough to kind of hold the fort.
Yeah, if I have to hear the phrase soleus strain ever again, I didn't know what that was before these playoffs. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got Giannis, you've got KP, you've got others dealing with calf strains. Mike Conley was dealing with one early in the conference semifinals. I mean, that is, calf strains have threatened to derail this entire postseason. And I get the desire to be cautious with Porzingis because, look, not all injuries are created equal, but, you know, the facts are Kevin Durant had a calf strain during the NBA Finals of 2019. That led to an Achilles tear, which cost him the entire next season. So if you're the Celtics, like, part of you is thinking about this series. Part of you thinking, like, hey, if Porzingis exacerbates that injury, might lose him all of next year. That's got to be in the back of their brains inside that office. As well. Look, I think they can win the series without him. I mean, all the prognostications I've seen out there are 5-6 games. So, you know, not all guesses are correct, of course, but the Celtics do have a pretty decent talent edge in this series, experience edge in this series. They don't necessarily need him. I think they will need Luke Kornet to play some meaningful minutes in this series. I mean, you said Al Horford, 38 years old, almost 38 years old, played a great series last round and, you know, doesn't get enough credit for playing at this level at this stage of his career. But you kind of mentioned the pace of play here, and it is going to be kind of a track meet if Indiana has its way. And I think you're going to need to give some of your guys breathers at times, you know, especially if Al's chasing around like Miles Turner or some of these other guys out there on the floor. I think you need more from Luke Kornet. And look, Kornet, you know, he played just 12 minutes per game in the four games he played against Indiana. You know, 4 points, three rebounds. Like, he's got to be a little bit better than that. Be an impact player on both ends in this series. You know, Kornet,
Can I give you the curveball? That's probably
Please.
So, well, I think it's twofold. I think one, you're just going to play smaller at some point, right? That might be Tatum at the center, which they didn't play. I've actually been surprised that they haven't gone to that more without Porzingis, just to even just get a look at it, right? And maybe they just wanted to back pocket it. They know kind of how that works, and they have enough talented guards. You could go three guards with Peyton Pritchard, or you could go, you know, more size and add Hauser out there, however you want to do that. Like, you can find ways to make that work. You know, maybe Xavier Tillman will get a chance here. But I think the wild card is going to be O'Shea Brissett. We had saw, especially I think I got to go back and watch the film. I know for sure he played a couple small ball lineups as sort of the de facto center. And he has motivation going against his former team. And he, you know, it's just I've been at practice the last couple of days, it's weird. Like, I don't feel like I've seen a lot of O'Shea Brissett, and all of a sudden he's out there shooting. And so, I don't know, antennas go up. I do think they know that's a motivated player going against his former team, the same way that Aaron Nesmith is going to be hell-bent in this series. And so I wonder if, whether it's O'Shea, whether it's Tillman, like, you're just going to see some small ball lineups. And, you know, because you can't let Al go 38 minutes in this series, or if he's going to be gassed.
So you're calling for the O'Shea Brissett bat signal to go up in this series.
They haven't had to use it like all season, but it was like, you know, like, this is why you build rosters and you hope that there's a need. And I did not expect at any point this postseason to be like, oh, shit. I actually heard someone, you know, a couple podcasts up here were talking about it, and I was like, I don't know if that makes sense. Then, like, I started jogging my memory, and I was like, yeah, I guess they did go small like that. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, he has been in practice a little bit more, at least visible. You know, maybe they will kind of throw out. The only thing I would say there is he's really limited offensively, really struggles to finish around the basket. Joe typically doesn't trust players that can't keep the offense afloat. And if you're thinking you're going to have to trade baskets with this team, it might limit just how much they go to it. But I just think they got to be creative here.
So let's talk about the matchups these two teams had in the regular season. Celtics were 3-2 against Indiana during the year. I've not played them since late January, so a lot of time has passed. Only one played game against Indiana with Pascal Siakam, who's been great this postseason. He had 23 points in that matchup with the Celtics back on January 30th. Halliburton missed one of those games, so there's been a lot of moving parts since the Celtics and Pacers last played. What did you take away, though, from those matchups that maybe help you kind of foresee how this series might go?
Yeah, I guess I default to, right, they got the Pacers when Halliburton was in all the conversations about, like, the best players in the league and dominating, because the Pacers were really good out of the gates, right? And the whole IST thing, and we can overinflate that all we want, but, you know, he was really good at the start of the year, and then he hit the injuries, the calf, or the hamstring and the ankle against the Celtics. And so, like, he just didn't seem to be the same player. I think we've seen in that Knicks series, he's a little closer to what the Celtics saw at the start of the year. And I think that's the Halliburton they're going to have to expect, you know, like, the guy who can all of a sudden start raining down threes and still hurt you with the pass and all that. And I still don't think he's even quite back to that level where his assist numbers were off the charts. And so, but it's undeniable. You look at their offensive rating, you look at the points they put up, they're going to want to win the shot margin. If you've spent any time in Boston, you know Joe Mazzulla, like, loses sleep if his team does not get more shots. Don't even worry about the three-pointers. Like, it's all shot margin, rebound margin, turnover margin, and the Pacers are really good at that, and they're well-coached. And so I just think that, to me, is they're going to – we talk a lot about the math game up here and Joe Mazzulla wanting to win the math, like, with the three-pointers and all that. Indiana's going to try to win the math game with – pushing the pace, getting more shots, getting offensive rebounds against a smaller Celtic team, and just trying to win that battle. And the Celtics got to be ready for that. And you can tell Joe, that's, like, all Joe has harped on in the kind of the ramp up here. But it, for me, it comes down to Halliburton. Are Derek White and Drew Holiday ready for that challenge? Like, how much can you pull Jalen or Jason off of a Siakam, or, you know, however you want to play that matchup game? But, like, he's the one it feels like that there's the most variance. Like, if he's really good, you're probably screwed. And if he's really bad, then it feels like you can win that game.
Oh, we saw that in the Knicks series. Like, when he was great, you know, it was tough to stop the pace. When he was bad, the Knicks usually rolled. And look, you go back to that December game, the quarterfinals of the play-in tournament. Haliburton had 26 points. He shot like 55% from the floor, 45% from three against Boston, 10 rebounds, 13 assists, no turnovers in that game. So that was like the best version of Tyrese Haliburton. But he had, in the three games he played beyond that, missed that, you know, 50-point blowout game the Celtics had. But three other games, 12.3 points, 35% from the floor, 23% from three, four rebounds, seven assists. So the Celtics can look back on what they've done against Tyrese Haliburton and say, we've kind of got some stuff figured out here. You can, you know, throw a big body in Jrue Holiday. We can put Derek White in his defense, an even bigger body in Jaylen Brown. Like, you can do a whole bunch of different things with the kind of defenders that the Celtics have, you know, for Tyrese Haliburton. And I don't want to make it too simplistic, but it kind of is
right
with these Pacers, right? Like, if you stop Tyrese Haliburton, you beat Indiana. If you make Tyrese Haliburton inefficient, you're going to beat Indiana. Like, the numbers bear that out over the course of the season. I also think the three-point line, as it always is with Boston, but the three-point line for both teams in this series is a key. I mean, Indiana, the two wins they had against the Celtics, they shot nearly 50% from three in those two games. So if you can, you know, make them inefficient from the three-point line and slow Tyrese Haliburton down, you're going to give yourself a chance
good, right?
to win the series pretty quickly.
You know, I think one thing that I fall back on is, as impressive as that win was on Sunday, I mean, they shot 70%. And the Knicks still had it at six. Yeah, which is ridiculous in general. But like, the Knicks got it down to six in the third quarter. I'm like, how is this happening? Like, how do you score this? How are you this efficient and you're still like trying to have the stiff arm? Now, like, look, they never really got close after that. And, you know, I do think beyond Haliburton, like, they got decent depth here. Like, TJ McConnell doing what he did is absurd. I'm not lying when I say Aaron Nesmith scares the hell out of me, both because because he went 8 for 8 in that game and was like phenomenal offensively, but he's like, when he was here, he was just the absolute loose cannon. Like, he was crashing into everything in sight. We nicknamed him Crash because of it. And I do think, add in a little jolt of, hey, those guys gave up on me because they wanted what they thought was a piece in Malcolm Brogdon to get them over the hump and win that championship, he's going to be pissed. And so I wonder how that's going to play out and whether he's just going to be absolutely swarming the Jays and trying to, you know, just the prototypical Aaron Nesmith revenge game. I think he's sort of the X factor in all this. And again, their younger guys have played well, but will they be ready for that stage? That game 7 win told me a lot about the fact that they can go into a tough environment and play well. But, you know, I just feel like the moment keeps getting bigger and bigger, and Celtics have been there. Pacers really haven't. I'm eager to see how that sort of differentiates itself as the series goes along.
I was going to get to Nesmith, but you brought him up, so let's get to him now. What is this, just a question of like opportunity meets talent? Like, I mean, he didn't have a lot of opportunities in Boston because he was behind some really good players. And look, I don't think the Celtics trusted him, you know, in the postseason in years past. So that's why they go out and get a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, who is on paper a more trustworthy player. But I got to say, few players and how they broke out have surprised me as much as Aaron Nesmith. Like, I didn't think much of him, and I didn't see as many games there as you did, but I was there a lot and I kind of watched him, and it's like, all right, he's a pretty good guy, decent athlete, you know, but his 3-point numbers, I don't have him in front of me, but like, they just took off in Indiana. Like, is, you know, maybe he dedicated himself more to becoming a better 3-point shooter. Maybe the freedom that Rick Carlisle gave him, you know, maybe enabled him to become a better 3-point shooter. But this guy has become a legit starter, obviously, on a conference finals team. And, I'm not exactly sure how we got here.
Yeah, I think anyone, like if you had told me that in 2 years he's going to be the roadblock to the Celtics getting to the NBA Finals, I probably would have thought you'd gone crazy and like something really weird happened in the universe. But yeah, you could just tell he was, even when he got here, you know, half the time with those kind of guys, it's like, is he making shots, right? And so whether it was Ime initially or Joe after that, if you're not making shots and you got the Jays in front of you, like, you're not playing, right? Like, and there was a ton of guards, there was wing depth, like, there's just not an opportunity there. Indiana was in this position where they could let him go out there and like the little puppy that doesn't know what to do with his legs and just like eventually figured it out, and he had the room to make mistakes and use that to grow. And, you know, credit to him, because it really doesn't happen. I start thinking about guys the Celtics have brought in that, you know, lottery-ish range. Romeo Langford, like, sort of same prototype, right? Like, didn't shoot the ball well, but everyone said he's a defender, he'll find it, he'll figure it out. Never did. Didn't have the motor that Nesmith has. Like, Nesmith had something that was clearly going to translate at the NBA level with the way he defended, and then the offense caught up to it. it's a bad comparison, but it kind of feels a little bit like Avery Bradley, where Avery comes in and doesn't make a shot for, God, felt like 6 months. Mm-hmm. They send him to Maine. They bring him back. Next thing you know, he's like kicking Ray Allen out of the starting lineup. And now, like, okay, I don't know if Aaron Nesmith was here in 2012, that would have happened, but it just goes to show that when you have opportunity, when you gain the confidence, and when, like, you have a coach that kind of molds you, it can translate eventually. And so credit to Nesmith, because, you know, he had to stick it out, and credit to the Pacers for developing him and finding a way, because, you know, that they didn't get a whole lot in that trade, and took on a lot of what I would say floatsome at the end there to make that deal and make the salaries work. But here we are, Celtics kind of had to still throw in a Rob Williams to go get Drew Holiday for Malcolm Brogdon's depleted armless body or whatever. Well, you know, from his injury that deterred him last year. So it worked out really well for the Pacers in terms of they got a core piece that really looks inspiring moving forward.
And he is going to be if Indiana wins, I would make a guess that Nesmith's going to be a big reason why, because he's going to have to defend one of the Celtics' top perimeter players, right? Whether it's Tatum or Brown. You know, and Tatum, I was looking up his numbers against Indiana this year, like outstanding. Like, yeah. He's averaging, he's like almost 60% from the floor, almost 50% from three. Like, he has been ridiculous. Now, Siakam is going to have an impact there, right? Like, Siakam's a very good defender. Yeah. You look back at his numbers in Toronto against Tatum and Brown, they're pretty good. But the question's going to be for Indiana, like, who defends the other guy, right? Like, are you going to, Nesmith probably gets the first, you know, tour of duty, but then you're talking like Obi Toppin getting a shot there. I mean, I think that's a huge problem for the Pacers going into the series.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you start playing the matchup game, right? And so, okay, they'll defensively, they'll probably do what the Cavaliers did. Okay, Al Horford beat you. Like, we're going to leave you open. Show us at 37 and 11 months and 2 weeks, you can make those shots and do what you did in game 7 or game 5 of that series, and do it consistently. And, you know, maybe that's enough. Maybe, like, that gives you a couple extra bodies to throw and impede the Jays. But even when they sub, like, they're smaller in terms of their guards, you know, like Halliburton's got size, but he's not an
elite
defender.
Oh, they're going to hunt him. 100%. They're going to hunt him all series
exactly
long.
And so, you know, that's going to be the trouble for them, is like, if the Pacers want to play fast and the Celtics are going to put you in every action and try to, like, really wear you down, you know, we saw this in the other series, right? They weren't afraid to go with the Mitchells of the world and you know, back to round one. So, like, I just feel like they know that there's advantageous matchups out here, whereas I don't know if the Pacers can look across and say, like, yeah, definitively we can do that. Like, maybe it's okay, we're going to try to put some stress on Al Horford, especially knowing, like, the pace we're going to play at and the fact that they don't have bigs that you can confident. Like, I don't know if this is a Luke Kornet series. That's what, so go back. I think you're right. I think you're going to get, he might get first crack, and Joe wants to stay big, especially because he doesn't want to lose the rebounding. But I just wonder if that's their path. Like, right. Like, shoot super high efficiency, attack whatever matchup you can on that back line, and just hope that's enough to kind of to hang around. But yeah, I just think the Celtics are, I don't know how Indiana is going to necessarily defend all of the Celtics' weapons. And that's even before Porzingis gets back.
So how significant do you think these bench minutes are going to be? Because you've thrown a couple of names out there. You've thrown out O'Shea Brissett and Xavier Tillman, who have, I'm not sure Celtics fans would necessarily recognize them, like, walking, you know,
I don't know if would notice them
on the concourse. Like, it's, I mean, these guys have not been factors during this postseason. Yeah. So far, like, the Pacers, you know, they think they have the best bench in the NBA. I think it's a little bit overhyped, but they've got guys they can trust and guys they're going to go to. T.J. McConnell was a standout.
The T.J. McConnell energy and the Peyton Pritchard energy, it's just going to, like, meet and just going to be explosion.
Who do you think, I was going to ask you this, like, who is the first member of the local media? Ooh. And I'll include you in this.
Yeah, that could be
writes the Peyton Pritchard, T.J. McConnell, like, you know, buddy comparison cop story. I'm going to go with Jay King, because this feels like it's in Jay King's wheelhouse to write about these two like gritty, you know,
yeah,
tough minded guys.
Two white guys.
Two white guys. That too, yes.
This is what we do. Like, both have been super impactful on their respective teams. And actually, like, you know, watching that game, like, man, McConnell, like, in every Celtic game that he plays against them, he is a pain in the ass. Like, yeah, he's just always needling them somehow. And so, like, I'm ready for it. But by the flip side, like, Peyton Pritchard's hit a bunch of big shots. I don't suspect it will be me to write that story, because, again, I think their energies are going to cancel each other out. So I don't necessarily know. Unless they start trading games, like, where McConnell wills them to a win on the road and then Peyton Pritchard goes into Indy and has a big night, then maybe I'll get to that point. but it's definitely coming because there's just so many, there's only so many storylines and the Celtics are kind of like super boring. So like we got to write about something and I can see if nothing else, like every time Peyton Pritchard hits one shot a game in these playoffs where you're like, man, that's kind of a ballsy shot. Like he pulled up from the logo in Cleveland, had another one when they got to like seven, which is about as close as Cleveland got that series. So it just feels like, yeah, we're gonna end up talking a lot about the bench pieces and whether they hold up. But like that's a lot of pressure on Indy's sort of role players. And I would, you know, we're throwing everyone besides Halliburton and Siakam in that mix.
And maybe it doesn't matter because the Celtics starting five is so good. But I do think Indy, maybe they can trust their bench more than the Celtics can. Like TJ's there, Ben Shepherd's there, Obi Toppin's there, you know, Isaiah Jackson, mm-hmm. he brings some energy off the bench. Again, maybe it doesn't matter, like, because this could be the kind of game where like three of them are decided by 20 plus points. Like, I don't know. But in a battle of the benches there, I think Indy's got a little bit more juice than
like
the Celtics have.
Especially without Porzingis, right? Like, because now you're down elevated. Like, you're right. Like, Cornette and Tillman and O'Shea, like guys that we just haven't seen a lot
of. Pushing O'Shea Brissett hard, man. You are calling your shot right now. You are calling your shot on O'Shea Brissett. I'm going to remember this if O'Shea Brissett is a breakout game.
He might not play a single minute this series, and it wouldn't surprise me. But I just got to start, because I think one of the things that you pointed out is that's valid, is right? Like, you got to stretch the bench a little bit more. Like, you can't play a track meet series and expect, without Porzingis out there, that all your guys are going to hold up. Like, I don't want Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown playing 43 minutes against this team and having to play a 105 possession game. So find ways to, like, this is the reason you built your depth. Like, this is Brad Stevens back in Indy. Like, strut what you got here in what you built. And it usually goes the other way at this time of year. But I wonder if this is a series where they at least got to experiment a little bit. And Joe Mazzulla, of course, will play the same seven guys and I'll look like an idiot.
Yeah. All right. So I think we both like Boston to win this series, but how far do you think it goes?
It's so weird being overconfident in the Celtics. Like, for years and years, I've just been conditioned to think 6 and 7 games, and it's almost jarring. Like, we just had, I felt like a month off, and I honestly was trying to think. I was like, I can't remember the last time we did this. Like, even the Celtics in 2008, one of the first years I was kind of around the team, it was like every series was a grind. You were never waiting for the next opponent. And here
Atlanta,
we are.
Milwaukee, like they had some dogfights in that postseason.
So in one regard, I'm like, they're overdue for a series like that. And then the rational part of me looks at this and goes, I mean, like, Indy's cute. And, you know, they beat two teams that were kind of really banged up. You know, not that the Celtics have played particularly well this postseason or should be celebrating their 2 5-game wins, but I think if the Celtics bring that focus, if they play to their capabilities, then this should be another 5-game series. And maybe it goes 6, and maybe there's a Nesmith game. Maybe there's like a night where the Pacers shoot 70% again. And maybe I'm crazy, and maybe they're just going to keep this thing trucking, and the pace is going to be like just crazy, and the Celtics aren't going to respond well to it. But I just feel like Celtics have more answers than the Pacers do for like how this thing should unfold. And so I guess I should go 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give Indiana one game at home because they do play pretty well at home. Halliburton usually plays a lot better at home, but I struggle finding another game to give them. Like, Indy's here and they deserve to be here, but man, they were effectively gifted, you know, incredible breaks in the first two rounds of these playoffs. Like, no Giannis, barely Dame in the first round. The Knicks mash unit, OG goes out early in that series. You know, no Mitchell Robinson. You know, they just had so many guys.
Brunson
breaks his hand in game 5. You know, Josh Hart has an abdominal strain that limited him, or game 7 rather, in Josh Hart in game 6. Like, I just haven't been as impressed with Indiana as I would be another conference finalist, right? Another team that got that far. So I think they win one of those home games, but I think the Celtics, I think they win in 5, man. I think they do. I hate to, you know, I'm with you. Like, the Celtics tend to let you down sometimes, and I think they're going to have one of those oddball games where they shoot like 25% from 3, and the storyline after is like, you know, Gary Washburn attacking Joe Mazzulla for shooting too many threes and not attacking the basket more. But I think the Celtics are on a different level than Indiana right now.
Yeah, and I'm ready to lose my mind when they fumble away another game too, and I'll sit there and say, like, what? And then they'll just recover on the road. Although it's like, it's Indy 500 weekend. Like, Indy should have some energy out there. I mean, remember how up they were for that IST game? Like, that was off the charts energy. So I do think you're right. I think game three is the one that they all of a sudden it's like, yeah. And I don't know, Larry Bird's in the, like, do you think Larry Bird shows up for this thing?
No.
He'll hide, right? Like, and not in a mean way.
I don't think Larry cares.
He doesn't like to be in the spotlight as it is. And then two of his teams sort of, and you know, I wonder if he'll.
The potential next round with Celtics Timberwolves, the Kevin Garnett series, like he will be at every single game. I saw this thing with Paul Pierce where Paul was asking who he'd be supporting. He's like, both. Like, whoever wins, I'm going to the locker room and celebrating. But let's see if they get there ultimately first. Chris Forsberg, check out his stuff over at NBC Sports Boston Game 1 on Tuesday night in Boston. Chris, good to see you, man. Thanks for doing this.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.